You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, we're back at the RV campgrounds, and we're back by the lake, and it's absolutely beautiful.
And Desi Dog has a zillion skunks to go chase after, which terrifies me.
I am never going to let her get within 30 yards of any of those skunks. And by the way, I've never seen so many skunks running around.
No, me neither.
And it's a little bit crazy because she loves the wildlife, and there's bunnies here, and there's coyotes, and there's geese and ducks,
raccoons.
But you know, she's really good with the geese and the ducks and stuff. She doesn't bother them at all. But anything that's small and crawling around like a bunny or a skunk, she just wants to be on top of it. And as a matter of fact, as we're sitting here at the table talking, Desi's on the other side of the table trying to sneak a cookie.
I know, she's just staring at us. Hopefully she'll stay quiet for a little while.
Well, you know what I like about this place, besides just a beautiful environment, is it's only about 20 miles away from our California offices.
Yes.
And, which is cool because within a half an hour, we can be at the office. And then, you know, coming home, I really look forward to coming back to the RV in this beautiful park and just sitting down and having a nice quiet dinner and now a great cup of flavored coffee with you.
Yep. What else could you ask for?
I know. So what's on your mind tonight, sweetheart?
Well, the big news lately seems to be this whole hubbub about Roseanne getting fired by ABC.
Oh, yeah. I've been following it.
Now, I have to admit that I never watched the show one time. And I'm sure I would have enjoyed it. It's just that we just don't really watch a lot of TV. And we don't have a TV hookup here in the RV. So we haven't been able to really watch TV. But, you know, the thing, listen, what she said was despicable, and I don't agree with it. However, what she said was no worse than what so many other people on the other side of the aisle have said and say every single day. People in the media, people on television shows, people on, you name the channel, MSNBC, CNN, ESPN, you name it. And the tweets by the likes of people like Keith Olbermann, just the vitriol at our president, calling him a white supremacist, calling him a Nazi, F this, constant vitriol, but nothing happens to them. Joy Behar, just kind of castigating all Christians.
Well, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, I mean, we can go on and on and on. I don't watch any of these TV shows, right? And I could care less about any of these so-called celebrities and personalities. But the thing that bothers me is that it tears the fabric of this nation. And it does nothing to move us forward as a people. What it does is just creates more dissension, more controversy, and totally distracts from the mission of our president and our administration and the things that the vast majority of American people, you know, what we want to do and where we want to go and what we want to accomplish as a people and a nation. It just bothers the heck out of me.
You know what bothers me, and I think that probably I discuss it with you every day at one time or another, is the name-calling, the constant name-calling. And some people have said, well, actually, Valerie Jarrett was one who said that part of what Roseanne said was his fault, was President Trump's fault. I don't understand that. How could that possibly be his fault? And they continue to say that because he's racist, because he's white supremacist, and they keep throwing these labels out there. And then one of them came out and said that all of his followers. So now, instead of just being deplorables, we're all racists. And who are these people to label all of us like this when they're so very wrong? I honestly have never heard anything in Trump that I see as being racist. I don't know what you see.
Well, no, I mean, you know, these things that are happening are right out of the playbook of, you know, that Marxist Saul Alinsky. All right. And I'll tell you what, the labeling to them is extremely important. They throw a lot of spaghetti on the wall and they want to see what sticks. And then, of course, as it's been said many times before, if you say a lie often enough, people will believe it. And let's face it, the vast majority, unfortunately, of American voters are low information people. Okay, so they tend to resonate with one thing or another, but they're not, you know, multitaskers as far as, you know, understanding civics, understanding the government, understanding politics, understanding international relations, understanding, you know, the local news. They don't care about it. And you know what? Not to be at all disparaging, a lot of Americans are so busy working and trying to, you know, move their families forward, trying to get their kids into the good schools, trying to get their kids into college, trying to find, you know, even better employment, getting a foot up, paying mortgage payments, things like that. They don't have time to do a lot of research. But unfortunately, when you are more low-informed as a voter, you tend to believe what is transmitted vis-a-vis the radio waves and the airwaves of television. Boy, listen to that plane coming over the top.
But when you have a Chris Hayes from MSNBC saying that the Trump voters are racist, there's no basis for that. There's no foundation for that. And I just don't understand how they can continue to call everybody racist, because I'm so tired of hearing all those words over and over, misogynist, Islamophobe, that phobe, whatever you want to call us, and racist, because we support our president. When they continue to throw that out and label everybody, but yet they complain about people labeling. It's a whole hypocritical movement to me. Well, and I resent being labeled this way.
And you know what? I get it. I look at it a little bit different way, okay? I can choose to get really angry about it, or I can look at it as a behavioralist, and I can say, you know what? I think you can overdo something, okay? You can overdo the slights, the insults, the offenses, you know, the terrible language. You can actually overdo it, where then people just become, what's the word I'm looking for? You know where I'm going?
Yeah, it
here?
Just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
to
there
them
you
anymore.
Go.
That, sure.
That's what I'm trying to say. And I'm sorry, Switter, I don't have the right word for it, but you said it right. And I think that's where we are. And you know what? I think it's going to come back to bite these people. I think it's going to come back to bite them in the midterm elections, I pray God, and in the 2020 elections. I think the American people will rise up again and say, wait a minute, this is not what we want, meaning, you know, the diatribe and the vitriol of the people on the left, okay? I just think they're intelligent enough to see that the United States is in a much better place than it was just 2 years ago, and we have so much more to accomplish.
But these people, like Disney, obviously are not smart enough to realize that. When they allow somebody like Whoopi Goldberg to walk around with a T-shirt on, with saying Make America Great Again and showing a picture on the shirt of Trump shooting his brains out, why is she still employed there and Roseanne isn't? And I'm not defending Roseanne. I'm just saying that there is absolutely a huge dichotomy here between how one side is being treated over the other side.
You know, and I agree with what you're saying, but I don't want to get into a position of tit for tat. You know what I'm saying? It's all bad. I don't care who says it. it doesn't move us forward as a people.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And, you know, I don't think it's going to stop. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to get a lot worse.
Well,
but the people that put all that stuff out there, I firmly believe, will get what's coming to them with the elections.
I agree. And, you know, it reminds me of raising small children. So when you're raising small children and you want to get them to go to bed at 8 o'clock and they don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock, they're going to fight you tooth and nail. And really, lots and lots of parents give in to that and they just let them stay up later because, boy, it can be a fight, right? And once you do it and continue to stay consistent, then they just go to bed at 8 o'clock just fine. And that's what we're dealing with here, is we're dealing with people that, as you say, it's probably going to get worse before it gets better, just like it does with your kid who doesn't want to go to bed.
Right.
And then once they realize that it's not going to get them what they want, then they stop doing it. So I think that that's where we're at.
Well, I just think it's up to the American people to, you know, to figure this thing out and to, you know, voice their concerns with their vote.
Yes.
And with their pocketbooks, too, by the way. And,
absolutely.
You know, I've got another subject I want to talk with you,
okay,
you know, in a little bit. But you know what? I'm going to change it up a little bit.
Okay.
And I've got a good news story. And that is that President Trump just signed a very, very important piece of legislation referred to the Right to Try Act. You know, so what is that? It's something that President Trump actually talked about on the campaign trail.
Another promise kept.
And the president said that, you know, there are thousands, and we know this, right? I mean, we've even had friends that have been in this situation, but there are thousands of terminally ill patients out there that didn't have a fighting chance, okay, with respect to new medications or new types of treatments that are all experimental. Okay, well, now, because the president has signed the Right to Try Act, those people now have a fighting chance. And what the law does, honey, is it gives patients the ability to try experimental medications and treatments without waiting for years and years for FDA approval and without the disappointment of being denied participation in clinical trials.
That's okay. Great. And then they don't have to leave the country to go try to find that kind of care.
That's exactly right. And that's why he signed the legislation.
And now people don't have to leave the country to get the care that they need.
You know, that's exactly right. And just recalling what happened last month with that poor little two-year-old boy from England who was terminally ill. Do you remember that little boy?
Sure.
And the English government refused to let him leave the country, even though the Italian government offered to make him an Italian citizen and fly a military jet out there with a medical crew to pick that kid up and take him to Italy for some experimental treatment that might have saved him.
Right. So I am so for this. And, you know, this was not on my radar screen at all that he was even contemplating this. I had truly forgotten about it because he's really done so many different things since he's been in office. It's kind of makes your head spin. But this is so important to so many people. And it's so personally important to so many people's lives that I just, you know, kudos to President Trump for realizing that this is just something that, besides being able to save people's lives, I mean, it just can give them some hope.
That's right. And like you said, another promise kept.
Yes.
Well, listen, I've got another good story. It's a good medical story.
Okay.
Well, you know, check this out. I mean, just medicine and technology is so interesting. So medical scientists in Sydney, Australia, have developed a new surgical glue for binding wounds that works a lot like super glue. You know,
when we're
doing, you know, like emergency medical aid, like for camping and things like that, mm-hmm. We always make sure that we have a tube of super glue with us, right? In case we get a laceration, right? And we clean out that laceration, we put an antiseptic on it, and then what we do is we seal it with super glue, right? All right. Well, what they've got now is a special type of super glue that you put on the wound. Okay, so let's just pretend you've got a 1-inch laceration, okay, maybe even a little bit longer, but this is a special type of clear glue that you put on the wound, and then you put a blue light on it, like, you know, like a, you know, kind of like a black light type of thing. A UV light is what I'm thinking of. And within seconds, it seals up where you cannot even tell that there was a wound there.
Wow.
And I watched a video on it today, and I was just mesmerized with it.
It's like Star Trek.
It was it was like, you know, time-lapse, you know, photography where the wound just disappears. But anyway, don't you think that's a pretty cool thing?
Oh, I do. That's absolutely cool. I wonder how big of a wound they can put that on.
Well, the one that I saw in the video was about an inch and a half, and I couldn't believe it. They cleaned the wound, they put the glue on it, and then they turned the ultraviolet light on it, and it started stretching the clothes, and it completely closed up the wound. Or I'll tell you the truth, I don't even think that the person that had the wound is even going to have a scar.
You know, that might be a really good thing for puncture wounds, too, because those are always deeper and hard to heal. So yeah. I wonder if that would be really good. It might fill it in and close it up.
Well, anyway, kudos to those scientists in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah. Well, I have a frost my socks.
Well, go for it.
to change the subject here. Well, you know, we've had a lot of conversations and very serious conversations about the problems with the school shootings of late. And who comes out but a company to make a video game where you can be a shooter in a school hallway? An active shooter. You can be the active shooter in the school, or you can be the SWAT officer searching for the active shooter in the school. You have your choice of which to be. And I will not even tell you the name of the company because I wouldn't even want to give them that kind of credibility. But what on earth are they thinking to do something like this in this type of a day and age where this is happening all too frequently?
Well, you know what? Here's what they're thinking, and it's pretty simple. They're thinking about capitalizing on all of the press in regards to active shooting events and making money off of it. And they could care less about these victims, okay? They could just care less. It's all about money, and it, from what you're telling me, it's absolutely disgusting. As a matter of fact, you and I both despise all of these violent video games.
Yes.
And they do have something to do with people that become active shooters that are teenagers, okay? Because we've seen more than one when I'm doing my training on active shooting, and I do the psychological profile of these shooters. There have been a couple where they went over the background and they had violent video games, right? There's a lot more reasons for active shooting, especially with teenagers in schools, but why have another reason to give them something to fantasize about?
Yeah, and to depersonalize people's lives, because when they actually go into a shooting for real, they just see it as a video game again. They're not even real people. They don't see them that way anymore.
Well, they're completely disengaged,
yes,
you know, from reality and from people. And, you know, in the profile of active shooters, as we've discussed many times, they take no hostages, they make no demands, they shoot indiscriminately, they show no mercy, and they will shoot anybody. Infants, toddlers, little children, pregnant women, handicapped people, they don't care because it's just a target. And what exacerbates that behavior is watching and playing incessantly violent video games,
right,
honey.
So shame on that company.
Absolutely.
That's my frost, my socks.
Okay.
How about a refill?
I'm your Huckleberry.
You got it.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, thanks for the refill. And speaking of coffee, all right, Starbucks just completed their training where they closed down about 800, or actually 8,000 of their cafes for about a half a day to conduct racial bias, diversity, tolerance training, all the politically correct kind of training for their 175,000 partners and baristas, and the training cost them about $12 million.
Wow, somebody made some money on that.
I wish I had that training contract. But you know what? The thing that gets me about this, when you're talking about, you know, tolerance training and, you know, diversity training and understanding other people and all of this, the thing that really gets me about this is the CEO of Starbucks, whose name is Howard Schultz. Okay, so this guy is a multi-billionaire. And when they asked him about the training and why did you do the training, he doesn't accept the responsibility for his baristas, you know, that get a couple of poor black guys in Philadelphia kicked out of a Starbucks and arrested.
Right.
Okay, he doesn't apologize for baristas in New York City not allowing a uniformed officer who's on patrol in that area that literally protects Starbucks to allow that poor officer to go to the bathroom. Okay, they don't apologize for the anti-Christian, anti-military, and anti-law enforcement snide remarks that baristas write on people's coffee cups.
Right.
Okay, or failure to serve police officers that just want a cup of coffee. And who drinks more coffee and eats more donuts than cops, right?
Right.
There's no apology or accepting of ownership for any of that. He turns around and he says, well, this is because President Trump has exacerbated the racism issue in the United States.
Oh, here we go again with the name calling.
Are you kidding me, Howard? Let me tell you something. You know, did he take that training? Okay, I hope he was in the front row, okay, because you want to talk about somebody who's condescending, who's pedantic, and who's a name caller and a hypocrite. Hey, you know, I would tell him if he was standing in front of me like you are, sweetheart, I'd say, Howard, I said, why don't you look in the mirror and see why the problem exists, why you had to close down 8,000 stores? Okay, maybe it's a little bit of your mentality that created that situation with your baristas who practice racism and intolerance, and they have, you know, a complete lack of diversity.
Okay. But what caused that situation was a very simple thing. I don't think it was racism at all. What caused that situation was their policy of not allowing people to use the restrooms unless they were a paying customer. That was their policy, and that barista or that person at the register was following their policy. So how this got so blown up, it got blown up because they happened to be black people that happened to. Because as you pointed out, when it happened to a police officer, nobody cared and nobody said a word about it. And nor did anybody call the police. So there, you know, there's a few things happening.
Well, they
here.
Didn't call the police because he was the police.
Well, he was the police, but I'm just saying that's you know, so we're not treating everything the same. But the policy was the issue. It wasn't racism that was the issue.
So let me tell you what they've done now. They've got the new policy where everybody's welcome. Okay.
Right.
So homeless people, drug abusers, prostitutes, you know, you name it. Anybody that wants to come into Starbucks to just sit around, not buy coffee, not buy anything, anybody that wants to go in there and use the restroom, go ahead, because everybody's welcome. Okay? Now, you touched on something as a business person, sweetheart, that I totally resonate with. We just can't have anybody come into an establishment and just go in there and lock themselves in a restroom.
Well,
right?
And it's more than that. So as a business establishment, and Starbucks is a place where lots and lots of people, because you and I across the country go into Starbucks often because of me, not because of you.
Now, I'm not a fan of Starbucks.
No, you know what? I'm not a fan of Starbucks either, but I am a fan of coffee. And if that happens to be, there happens to be more Starbucks than anything else out there. So it just happens to be that there is one somewhere that I'm going to go.
Yeah. And you know, I'm almost never seen you. And we're usually together when we get coffee. I don't get the Starbucks coffee because I just don't support the company. But, and that's for a variety of reasons, some of which I just mentioned. But I know you do. And the reason that you do is because of the convenience, because you always use the drive up and you're always getting coffee when you're going to work in the morning.
Right. Right? I never walk in. Now, I actually, the other companies, I prefer their coffee over Starbucks coffee. But there's just not as many of them around, and I have to make more of an effort to drive out of my way. So
well,
that's
sure.
That's my.
But
from a business standpoint, Ron, when you go into Starbucks, there's lots of people who do spend time in there, who do drink coffee, who do bring their computers, who do have meetings in there, who do work in there, who use it kind of as almost like a mini office type area, and those people are not going to be as likely to sit in there and drink their coffee and be paying customers if you have a lot of riffraff hanging around there now.
Right.
And if they can't go use a clean restroom and that type of thing, or if they feel uncomfortable or nervous or unsafe. Right. So I think Starbucks has stepped in at this time and not made a good business decision out of their political correctness. And nobody could be happier than me than to see somebody get their comeuppance by just being politically correct, because that's not always the right thing to do.
Well, you know, when this story first came out and I looked into it and I started reading like some of the tweets from, you know, anonymous baristas working at Starbucks, and they were all saying pretty much the same thing that you're saying.
Really?
You know, they're not saying, hey, we're not a bunch of racist and intolerant people. This was a store policy. Just what exactly do they want us to do? Right? We're following store policy, then all of a sudden now we're getting chewed out because we followed store policy, and now policy is changing, and they're really concerned about their safety, they're concerned about the customer safety, and they're concerned about the company losing market share, because you just touched on it. A lot of people use Starbucks that are students, that are business people. They bring their computers, they get to use the free internet and have a cup of coffee. That's sort of the toll that you pay, you know, to use the internet, and people don't have a problem with that, right? And every time we go by a Starbucks, what do we see? We must see 15 or 20 people on the internet with school books or business briefcases and doing things like that. So I think the logical consequence of this is that they are going to lose some market share here. But again, I am so disgusted with their CEO, Howard Schultz. And I'll tell you what, I don't like Starbucks. I'm personally boycotting Starbucks. And I'm going to tell some of my friends to do the same thing if they feel the same way that I do.
Well, and I think you've already told me to boycott Starbucks, and I'm happy to do that, because it's not about the coffee for me. I like coffee, so I will find other places to have coffee. That's not a problem for me at all. I mean, even McDonald's makes a decent cup of coffee today.
Well, I just want somebody that is, you know, makes as much money as Howard Schultz does to accept some ownership and not turn around and point a finger of blame at our poor president of the United States that had absolutely nothing to do with this. How can you possibly relate President Trump to what the heck Starbucks is doing?
Well, and you know what? I think in every single thing that we have talked about this evening, President Trump has been blamed for all of those things. He's blamed for Roseanne. He's blamed for Starbucks. He's been blamed for everything. And this, you know, this is just the way that it is right now. Everybody seems to have to blame him. But, you know, I mean, for me, I would feel as an employee, and I think that their employees felt this way, a little bit insulted to have to be handed a manual that says something like, when did you first notice your own racial identity? I mean, talk about treating people like four-year-olds like this. And from what I've read, a lot of the Hispanic and the Black and the white employees of Starbucks were sitting around laughing at what was in the manual, because some of it's so politically correct that it gets to the point of being ridiculous.
You know, I think it just goes back to the golden rule that you learned when we were kids, and that is just treat everybody with respect and treat people in a way that you would like to be treated if you were on the other side of the barista counter.
And okay? You know what? To your point right there, that's a great point, and it's as simple as that. But also, leaders lead from the front, right?
Oh, I agree with you. There's no leadership here for Mr. Schultz.
And here is the leader who is doing exactly what he's telling his employees not to do. And he's berating somebody and calling them names.
Yeah. I don't know how you can teach tolerance. That's why I said, you know, the guy that needs to be in the front row in the first class
exactly. Is
Howard Schultz, right? Because when you say stuff like that about our president of the United States, who had nothing to do with the problem that you and your policies and your mindset created, and you turn around and you deflect, you know, and redirect blame towards a guy that had nothing to do with it, you know, you are not a leader at all. You're a coward.
And what do you expect from the people working for you? So, I mean, yeah, this is a shame, honestly, because Starbucks is a really good business model. And business-wise, I mean, they just have it wired. But he's making a mistake. And what his mistake is he's letting his politics so much into his business, and it colors what he does. And therefore, instead of embracing all people, he's driving a segment of the population away from his business.
Well, and that's his decision, okay? And with, you know, thousands and thousands of stores, I guess he's taken a look and done his analytics and taken a look at his bottom line, and I think he feels that he can afford it.
Well,
but
yes.
You know what? You know, it's not over till the fat lady sings.
Well, if there's people like me who go to Starbucks virtually every day, sometimes twice a day, and we stop going, then they're going to feel it in their pocketbooks. And that's what should happen, because you cannot, to my mind, in my world, you cannot call our president these names and blame him for things that are nothing of his fault and expect me to be your patron. So,
well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to speak with my pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Have I talked you into it?
Absolutely.
It's a boycott.
It's a boycott.
Hey, well, you know, I've got an interesting story, and it's usually about, you know, we talk about police work so often during our evening conversations, but I want to mention something about some new research that shows that police body cams are actually, in the research about the body cams and citizen complaints, they're actually proving that police do the right thing far more often than not, and the police are taking false complaints by the public. And you've been on your soapbox about that for the last month.
Well, I am on my soapbox about that, because there are so many, and it's not just, it's by regular citizens, it's by people in authority positions. It's just by lots of people that are making these false complaints. And I always knew that the body cam would be a good thing for officers and not a bad thing. And, you know, my own personal view is that it's the public that needs to de-escalate, not the police, because the public is the one who's escalating the problems very often.
And, you know, I took that idea and I ran with it with an article that I wrote a few months ago in Police Magazine about it's the public that needs to de-escalate. So you're absolutely right. So I want to just mention this research that was done by the San Francisco Police Department and their Office of Police Accountability. And during the third quarter of 2017, which is, you know, just a few months ago, they did a research on 707 allegations.
Wow.
That's a lot. right? Yeah. Because, you know, San Francisco PD isn't really a very huge PD, but they'd had 707 allegations that were investigated, and 221 allegations resulted in proper conduct findings. In other words, the police didn't do anything wrong. Only 35 of the 707 allegations resulted in sustained findings. 126 of the allegations resulted in completely unfounded findings, meaning it didn't even happen.
Right.
Totally false allegation. And 105 allegations resulted in no finding or the complaint was withdrawn. Okay? And another 220 resulted in not sustained. But what it equates to is only 1 out of 20 and slightly less than 5% of the complaints proved to have been corroborated. Okay, so what do you think about that? What do you think about 95% of the complaints being, in favor of the police? Or 95% of the complaints not sustained, never happened, or they had been withdrawn? Okay.
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised. And secondly, I think that in light of the other study that recently came out that you and I were talking about by some other more nefarious group that said that the body cams were actually not telling the whole story.
That's right. But, you know, I did the research on that group because, you know, we deal with, you know, body camera evidence all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we even have Greg Stutchman, who's our video audiologist, right? And so we know that, you know, it actually validates what the San Francisco Research Project said. But I saw something fishy in that one, article of this so-called research project that you were talking about. So I looked up the group, and I'm not even going to categorize them with a name. Okay, that's how much disrespect I have for them. But I will tell you that it was a George Soros Open Society Foundation funded group. So huge red flags,
yeah.
Anti-law enforcement, George Soros funder of Black Lives Matter, and, you know, Marxist organizations, anti-police organizations, anti-rule of law organizations. But what really angered me about this company is that it's run by a person that has no police practices experience, no scientific experience, and, you know,
but they have a big agenda.
Hero of the ACLU when I looked her up, okay?
Yeah.
And it was just ridiculous. Doesn't know anything about police work. But, you know, here's something else. Going back to the San Francisco Research Project, because, you know, a lot of people scream discrimination. You know, in the three, cases that you talked about just within the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
that were all false complaints, discrimination happened to have been what? A big deal in the complaint, right?
Yes.
I was racially profiled.
Yes.
Check this out. Of the 707 complaints that they investigated in San Francisco, 151 were discrimination-based complaints, okay? And 145 were use of force complaints. So 151 were discrimination-based, and 145 were use of force, excessive force complaints. Guess how many were founded by the investigation, which is an independent investigation agency? How many?
Zero.
Zero.
Wow. Wow, good guess.
Okay. So, you know, that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal, and it changes the narrative totally. And this needs to be out everywhere. Everybody needs to hear this, because in my own world, I knew that this would be the result. But this message has to get out to American people that all of this, all of these complaints against the officers, the vast majority are unfounded. The narrative is a lie, and we keep repeating it and repeating it, and that puts officers and citizens in danger.
It does.
It needs to change.
And, you know, just in closing on this particular story,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting because when body cams and dash cams first came out, A lot of police officers were totally against it. It's like Big Brother looking over their shoulder and everything. I'll tell you what, that perception now by police officers is changing because they are finding that now the body camera, more likely than not, tells a better story than a lot of the people that make these allegations against them, and it's forensic evidence that can be used.
And why is that, Ron? It's because 99.9% of police officers are all out there doing the right thing, and they're helping people, not hurting people.
That's right. How about our last cup of coffee?
Last refill.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, hey, sweetheart, have you got some good news for me?
Well, you know, there's quite a bit of good news today, which I love. There's a company that's mostly based in the UK. It's called Manager. They were bought out, okay? And they apparently got a huge amount of money. They were bought out by a big holdings company for $2
billion. What kind of
and
company is this?
It's a cafe chain. Mostly
okay.
In the
and
UK.
And what's the name?
You want me to try that again?
I want you to try that
it's,
again.
I don't know.
Spell it for me.
It's Pretamanger.
Okay.
Pretamanger.
Okay.
I don't know. But anyway.
But it was worth $2 billion.
Yeah, I guess so. It was based out of the UK. But what they're doing that's unusual, that's pretty cool, is they're taking $12 million of the money that they made, and they're sharing it amongst all of the employees that work for the company.
Oh, that's, I love stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's just, there's 530 stores around the world, and people are just going to get a big payday on the last check that at least that company writes for them.
Well, you know, that's cool. You know, one of my very favorite shows that I watch when I get an opportunity is Undercover Boss. Have you seen that show, Undercover Boss?
Oh, I have, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, usually, no matter what company the undercover boss, the CEO, is dealing with, he always finds one or two people.
Yeah.
And he always does something really, really cool for them. So I love it when CEOs and stuff take a leadership role and they, you know, they forward their employees. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, the parent company here, this JAB, that bought out this chain, just to put it kind of in context, they also bought out in America Krispy Kreme and Panera Bread.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those are
so
big
they,
chains.
Yeah, they are big into that cafe food market type of chains.
I get it, and I love both of those places.
Yeah, so it's nice that they're sharing all of their income with the employees that worked there at the time that they were bought.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And here's another good news story that I really, really love. So there's a university, the University of Memphis announced this week that they were going to be offering free tuition to the children and spouses of fallen service members.
Oh, that's, God, that is so
they are
needed.
The first college university to do this. And any Tennessee resident, 24 years or younger, who would qualify under the what they call the Folds of Honor scholarship.
You know, I wish, you know, there are so many universities that have these foundations and they have, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And wouldn't that be wonderful if that idea from Memphis catches on and more universities offer these types of scholarships?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if every university offered these types of scholarships? Perhaps rather than giving the illegal aliens free education, they could give it to the members of our military who have fallen in the line of duty for their families.
You know, there's just no way that we can repay them for the ultimate sacrifice, you know, but we can sure do something to make their lives a lot easier.
Yes.
You know, well, I've got one.
Okay.
So my heroes of the day are NYPD, and you know I love NYPD. Well, NYPD officers and their helicopter crew rescued some kayakers that got stranded way out in Jamaica Bay. All right, so in a dramatic rescue, they used the NYPD helicopter and dive teams, and they went out there and they scooped up a couple of kayakers that had tipped over in their kayakers out in Jamaica Bay. Okay, so they sent their scuba divers into the water. One of the guys kind of floated away.
Oh, dear.
And so, boom, divers in the water.
Well, right? I don't know. Where is Jamaica Bay? Do you know?
I don't know. I thought maybe they went all the way to Jamaica.
No,
but it's
kind of, I don't think so.
Why are they going out there?
I don't think NYPD is going that far.
I don't know. Not being from New York, it's got to be someplace around New York.
Sure.
But anyway, kudos for them, okay? And they did find that second kayaker that floated away, and they managed to get him on board the Hilo. So congratulations to the dive team and the helicopter crew at NYPD. You're my heroes of the day.
Well, there was a young man by the name of Corey Patrick, who has been waking up at 4 a.m. every morning to catch a local school bus to get to Tarrant High School in Alabama. So he lives about 10 miles from the school, but he has to go about 90 minutes on public transport. So he has to get up at 4 a.m. and get to the bus stop and take these different buses to get to school, and he's done it every single day. So for graduation, well, this young man walked down the street in his graduation gown to get on the bus and go all by himself to his high school graduation.
Dressed in his graduation gown.
Yes.
Wow.
And I guess that the bus driver had been so impressed with this young man doing this for so very long, he put something on Facebook. And it just went crazy. It got 43,000 shares on Facebook, and people were looking at what this young man had done for himself to get himself through school, and it caught the attention of a radio host by the name of Ricky Smiley. So the radio host, along with a few of his friends, gifted Corey with a brand new car in recognition of his dedication and perseverance of getting himself to school every day at 4 a.m. in the morning.
You know, that is so difficult to do. Just imagine what it would be like. I mean, you and I get up early. We sure don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But just imagine what it would be like. And it's a younger person, right? The drive and the ambition and the tenacity and the perseverance of a young man to get up every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning to take a bunch of different buses to get 10 miles to go to school.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. We used to have to drag our kids out of bed.
I drag myself out of bed, for God's sakes. But you know what? That's a great story, and I'm glad you told me about that tonight.
Well, there's a little bit more to it.
Oh, go ahead.
So along with the new car, a GoFundMe page was created for this teenager that's raised more than $19,000 for him, and he also received a full scholarship to Jacksonville University.
Oh, my God.
So,
I just
so
love
one
that.
Bus driver who noticed this young man changed his life.
That's amazing. And, you know, now he's got money for a dorm room and money for food, too, you know, to go to school. So I love that.
Yeah. And I have some heroes. So my first hero is a little young man, a little seventh grader at Avon Middle School North in Indiana. So he was collecting up his money, you know, his allowance and so forth, to buy video games. And after he learned about the food shortage at a local food pantry, his name is Brecken Hayes, he donated all of his money to the food pantry.
Do you hear Desi drinking?
She's having a drink
of water.
She's having a drink of water. Okay, but Brecken Hayes, he donated all of his money to the food bank, and it was $450. And the whole entire school donated $1,450 of it was from this one young man who decided to donate the money instead of buying video games with it.
Oh, I love that story.
Well, and here's some more good news. So imagine this. You are 24 years old and you live in the Bronx and you don't have a job. And your single mom raised you working two jobs, one at Burger King and one at another fast food place, McDonald's and Burger King, in order to raise you.
Sounds like a conflict. Well, you know, Burger King and McDonald's?
No. And it's your birthday, so you go in and you want to buy a birthday outfit, but you also buy a lotto ticket. So...
Now, who does this? The mother
this
or the
young
kid?
Man,
the young man, 24-year-old kid. Okay.
Buys a lotto ticket, and it's a scratcher.
Okay.
Won $5 million.
Can you win that much money on a scratcher?
Oh, apparently so.
I didn't know you could win that kind of money
and
on a scratcher.
And he won $5 million.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And what's he doing with the money is he's buying a house for his mother and another one for himself and for his 28-year-old brother. And he wants to give the house to his mother for having worked those two jobs and raising him up to be a very nice young man. He also has a 4-year-old daughter, so he's going to make sure that she's well taken care of, too.
That's a great story.
I'm going to go buy a lotto ticket.
I didn't know you could make $5 million bucks on a scratch off. I'm going to have to start reevaluating that.
So I have a couple of police officer heroes today, too.
Okay.
Okay. And, you know, this just still always goes to my, that police officers do more nice things for people than not, by far. And we have Dallas police officer, his name is Donald Boyce, and he was called to a traffic accident where a family from Michigan was traveling at a high rate of speed and hit an object in downtown Dallas. And, of course, you know, they have a lot of construction going on there right now.
Oh, boy, every time we drive through there.
Yeah, and they had three children in the car, ages 5, 2, and 3 months old, and the parents. And the father was hurt, but nobody was critically hurt.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, it's because the car was pretty bad. But here's the officer who takes that 3-month-old baby out of the car and... You know, he's holding that baby like his own and comforting the baby and taking care of the baby till everybody else is taken care of. And again, those are just things that are everyday things that officers do. They don't have to do, but they're human. They have their own children and they want to give comfort to a distressed little 3-month-old. So kudos to that officer. And my dog story for the day.
I'm good. Go for it.
I don't know how this happens, but we have a dog in Maine who's in the house and the family's gone somewhere and the dog's in the house and it's a 2-story house and the dog goes upstairs and comes out on the roof from the upstairs window. So now the dog is out on the roof and stuck out on the roof by itself.
What, did he just come out through the window?
I guess he came out through the window.
Okay.
And... anyway, couldn't get back in. So he's standing on the roof, and the neighbors start calling the fire department,
of course. You're not going to call the police.
Yeah. So we have...
they don't have ladders.
Yeah. Fire Captain Jeff Knoffel went and got a ladder, and he climbed up on the roof, and then he opened the window to the upstairs and let the dog back in the house. But it was very cute, because before he did that, dog just licked his face all over and said, "Thank you so much."
I love that.
For getting me off the roof.
Oh, that's great.
And then I have, you know, here's my hero of the day.
Okay, go ahead.
And I know that you have heard about this because who hasn't? But still, it's worth a mention for me. We have this, what they call the real life Spider-Man, who saved the toddler. from dangling from a Paris balcony. So we have a four-year-old little toddler who was hanging multiple stories up from a Paris balcony. And how that kid hung on for as long as he did.
Hanging from the balcony.
Literally. You have to see the pictures of the way that this building was. And this young man, Mamudo Gassama, 22, he was a Malian illegal immigrant. He was illegal in France. Okay. He had come there just recently because he wanted a better life.
But from the African country of Mali?
But he was an illegal alien there. And what he did, you have to see the video, and you can get it somewhere on the internet, is he literally saw this child way up there dangling from this balcony, and he ran across the street, and just like Spider-Man, he climbed up that building. He
climbed up the side of the building?
Climbed up the building. There was balcony after balcony after balcony, and he just kept pulling himself over these balconies and getting up to the next one. It's like Spider-Man. And he got up to that little boy in a heartbeat, and he saved him and pulled him to safety.
That's phenomenal.
That is phenomenal. And the French president, Emmanuel Macron, he gave him citizenship to France. And he gave him a job in the French fire department because he said, if anybody was made to be a fireman, it's you.
Well, what a wonderful gesture. And I couldn't think of a better way to thank somebody for that heroic and very dangerous gesture.
And
I think he got the right job too.
yeah. And you know, I mean, what this young man said is, the more I climbed, the more I had the courage to climb up higher. That's it. You know, he doesn't give himself any credit. So I didn't think about it. I just did it. And that's what a hero is. And he's my hero of the day.
Fantastic. Well, that is a wonderful way to end our conversation for this evening.
Yep. I'll get the dog.
And I'll put the dishes away. Okay. And I'll meet you in the boudoir.
You got it.